There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Thursday. Another couple of hours of live local talk. Of course, you can get in touch with us through the text line or the phone line, 343-0106. Also, the FM Talk 106.5 app. You can leave us one of those talkback messages, but that's just part of it. It's a digital Leatherman. It's a digital multi-tool. I mean, you've got the up-to-date traffic maps on there, the up-to-date weather whenever you need it. Of course, streaming the radio station 55 hours a week of podcasts. You can grab those from the front page of the app as well. As set alarms to turn on and wake you up with Dan and Dalton or whenever you decide to wake up. Maybe you wake up like Jeff Poor late. You could do that as well. That's on there. But on the front page, you also see a microphone icon. If you have that open, you mash on the microphone icon and you can leave us a message. Emails it right here to the station. We can play it back. So leave us a talk back right there on the front page of the FM Talk 106.5 app. Now it's free, available at the App Store for iPhone users and Google Play for Android users. Just look for FM TALK 1065. No decimal point, no point between the 6 and 5. I don't know why, but it doesn't like it. So just FM Talk 106.5 and grab that app today. All right, bringing on my buddy Dale Leash from Lanyap and lanyapmobile.com. Lots to talk about with him today. I will say in a second, I'm going to have him try to walk me through what happened at Tuesday's Mobile City Council meeting. The same way I'm still kind of... Hearing Mike Lindell talk to Jeff in that last segment, as confused as I am about what Lindell was saying, I'm kind of confused as well what happened in the city council meeting. So I'm going to have Dale sort out at least one of those for me and also give us an update on co-publisher Lanyap, Rob Holbert. Dale Leash, good to talk to you, man.
Hey, it's good to talk to you. Please don't make me explain Mike Lindell to the listeners, because I can't, but I'll do my best with the zoning stuff.
Good, because they both seem Byzantine to me, so we'll get it. But first, first update on Rob. How's he doing? What's the latest?
I think he's healing, so that's good. We don't know how long he's going to be in the hospital to this point. But we're just, he's doing better, and we hope to have him back as soon as possible.
All right. We'll keep checking in with you for those updates. And
absolutely.
And so, because there's a lot of people concerned about that. All right.
Absolutely.
City Council this week. So, first of all, let's do this. New City Council is set early November, right?
November 1st, actually. Okay. They'll have an organizational meeting on, I think it's a Monday. The first is a Monday. They'll have an organizational meeting on that Monday and then a regular city council meeting on that Tuesday. So that'll be the start of the new term.
So this coming week is the last of city council meetings for this group, right?
Yeah, this will be the last meeting for councilors like Fred Richardson, Bess Rich, and John Williams, and I know John Williams personally has been counting it down, so I know he can't wait to be done. So he's got one meeting left.
But after last week, I was ready to be done with it, and I'm not even on the city council. On Tuesday. So we can get into where people taking shots, where people making their last move before they leave the council. But this was much of that meeting was a discussion about zoning, right? And mother-in-law suites, and kind of explain. Because people have been talking about this week, but I don't know exactly what was it at question.
Yeah, so let me... broadly, this the UDC, the Unified Development Code, is basically new zoning rules. It's got a fancy name, and people may not understand it, but if you know anything about development and about your home and about what the land use of the city is, then it just comes down to zoning. It's new zoning regulations is what it is. And we have Bess Rich, who's been very, outspoken about zoning rules and what needs to happen with them, and she's been very interested in zoning. She's been the council's representative on the planning commission for years. So this process goes back 5 or 6 years. The city, Mayor Stimson's administration announced that they were going to update the zoning rules that have been in place, the current ones, since 1967, I believe. Only a few people, only a few people probably remember when they were put in place,
right?
Initially. So this is just basically an update. It was going to modernize the code. It was going to modernize the zoning rules. And there were several ways to do that, and several things that were going to be added to it that I think some folks may have had an issue with, and that I know Bess Rich definitely had an issue with. So that's where we're at now, and it looks like after Tuesday's meeting that it may have to go back to the Planning Commission. So we're not talking about an entirely new process. We're not talking about 5 more years, but we're talking about another public hearing. Council will have to have at least 2 more public hearings before a vote, possibly.
And so this updating of the zoning seemed, what was talked about most, I heard, was this idea of a mother-in-law suite or another building in the back, right?
So it's called auxiliary structure.
I'm sorry. Yes.
The colloquial term is mother-in-law suite. The idea there is, to have elderly parents or whatnot come and live with you on your plot of land in the city. That, from what I understand, that is something that cities around the country are doing more of, because as boomers age, the kids of boomers, which I'm a child of a boomer, a couple of boomers, we have an aging population. So as you want to take care of them, nursing homes and care homes may not be the solution for you, may not be financially feasible, may not be something you want to do. So cities around the country and Mobile in general are trying to come up with solutions to that. And one of those solutions is to allow these accessory buildings or accessory structures on your property by right if you live in a residential district. The concern there is, of course, if you build one of these and it's allowed by right, nobody says you can't rent it out. So you can't, it leaves it open to Airbnb it. It leaves it open to let another family live in there that may not be related to you. So it opens up the door for the argument is that it would do away with a lot of the residential zoning, that single-family residential would automatically just become multifamily residential. And so there's a lot of concern there among folks that are standing up for neighborhoods. And I do understand that argument. You can't prevent people from renting it out. But I think from the city's point of view, they're trying to open up options for folks as they grow older to not have to necessarily, live on their own,
mm-hmm.
or live in a care home. So that it's kind of a give and take there.
I wonder if it's one of those silly things where if you continue to roofline off of the primary structure, right, and you somehow carried the roofline and touched the other building, then it would just be a extension of the home. Yeah, you know how the market works. It figures out a way.
And you could absolutely probably argue that it's an addition. I mean, even in some historic districts, with the lot sizes the way they are and with the percentage of lots being building space, that would even be a problem. But, yeah, you could probably get away with doing that as well. But that's kind of... obviously the intent is the same, is to have a place where your elderly parents can live.
I was just joining us talking to Dale Leash from Landnap, landnapmobile.com. So there was one of the issues they were discussing, but then it kind of got into a Robert's Rules of Order or something, a debate about who can, right? I remember this, when they had to have something sponsored. You had to sponsor
right.
some move, and then who gets to sponsor and who can then can the sponsor say they're not sponsoring anymore? Walk us through what I saw on that. That was like a...
I swear, Sean, you and I are the only two people that are interested in this right now, but I will go through it if you want me to.
I do. Like, I mean, okay. Take us back in history because I remember you and I talking about this, that they really got solid on only so, but you had to have a sponsor to bring a resolution in front, right? Because you couldn't bring it. It had to be somebody, you know, you couldn't just bring a resolution up. So only certain people could.
Right. So this goes back to an argument back when Colby Cooper was, yep. was chief of staff way back, 6-7 years ago at this point, maybe even 8 years ago. They were the mayor's administration was putting stuff on the agenda that was maybe submitted by the council, by the city attorney, or submitted by a member of staff, and it wasn't sponsored by anybody. So to prevent that from happening, the city council put in a rule that only the mayor and or council members could sponsor something on the agenda, and if they didn't sponsor something, it couldn't be on the agenda. So that blast from the past came back at us in a big way Tuesday when noting that it wasn't going to pass due to lack of a fifth vote, when the mayor got wind that his zoning regulations were not going to pass, he told the chair of the meeting, CJ Small, he told him, I would like to, you know, take my sponsorship off of this. And he was the only sponsor. Take my sponsorship off of this. I no longer support it, thinking at the time that it would, you know, as a strategy, that it would remove it from the agenda and therefore the council couldn't vote on it.
Right.
The argument then became, well, what if Fred Richardson and Bess Rich sponsor it? That way it has a sponsor and we have to vote on it. And there was a difference of legal opinion with Ricardo Woods, the city's attorney, saying, no, it automatically comes off the agenda. Per the council's own rules and per Robert's Rules of Order. And the council attorney, Chris Arledge, saying, no, there's nothing really in the law that says that Bess Rich and Fred Richardson can't sponsor it and put it back on the agenda. So that's, it never, in his mind, it never came off the agenda, and they sponsored it and were able to vote on it. And they voted it down four in favor of the new zoning regulations and two opposed because it didn't have a supermajority vote.
So, I mean, the idea would be that, I'm just guessing here, but if you saw that it was going to fail under this current council, then you say, okay, I'm the sponsor, I'm not sponsoring it anymore. In other words, you may bring it back at another time, right, with other people on the council do it. And
when the new council, for instance, if the new council, because they tried to hold it over, they tried to delay the vote, and that got blocked as well. So this was the other alternative to delaying the vote was to just wait for the new council and then bring it back up. Now they can't do that, I don't think.
Can you bring it back? Is it like, can you tweak one thing in it and bring it back up as a new sponsored idea?
Now you'd have to, I think at this point, unless the mayor's office brings up the attorney's argument that it was never voted on officially because it wasn't on the agenda because it came off automatically, unless they try to push that with the new council, it'll have to go through the planning commission again. So the planning commission will have to have a public hearing. They will have to recommend it again, and then that recommendation will go on the agenda, and the council will have to vote on it again. So we're looking at two more public hearings. So it's a way to delay it is what really happened on Tuesday. It just got delayed. I don't think it got completely defeated.
Government. All right, when we come back, I want to talk more about the council here and a headline, if y'all check it out, at LandNetMobile.com, the Mobile Council seeking municipal judge candidates. This is pretty interesting as we've talked about that situation. We'll come right back. More with Dale Leash from LandNet, LandNetMobile.com. And also, I'm sure he remembers how to tell us to sign up for LandNetMobile.com. I will ask him that question as well when we return. News is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 10:24, Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Hi, I'm Sean. This guy right here, this is Dale Leash. Say hi, Dale.
Hey, everybody.
All right, people want to get signed up to check out, because you know how I am. I can't be bothered touching the actual newsprint, but I do love Lanyap. I do it online. Somebody wants to do that. How do they do what I do?
Well, they can go to lanyapmobile.com, which is our beautiful, beautiful website. Click the subscribe button, follow the prompts, and get subscribed. It is $1.50 per week for a subscription. And it includes, for people who don't want to touch the paper but still want to see it, it includes a digital printing of the paper in PDF format. Just you can click through, you can see where all the ads are, you see the ad placement, you can see everything that, you know, we mean for you to see in the way that we mean for you to see it. So please subscribe. You're helping out a local business, and really, really appreciate the support.
Yeah, we appreciate what y'all do. And let's talk about this as we wrap up here. Your story can, I'm reading it on the website right now, Mobile Council seeking municipal judge candidates. Wait a second. You see, Municipal Judge Carlos Finley is going to have to reapply for his job as a judge?
He will. He will. And he says he wants to. So he'll have to reapply and re-interview, as will Bucky Thomas, who is the other part-time judge. So we have, and I got to tell you, it's hard to imagine. I know T.J. Small told me that this was to allow the new council, and there are four new council members, to be fair, but to allow the new council a chance to interview candidates and choose their own candidates and whatnot. And we do have more than half the council changing over. But it is hard for me to believe that this has nothing to do with the election and Carlos Finley running for mayor.
So this is, it's a you reapply to do, I mean, any chance that they're not going to say yes on this? I mean, it seems like this should be.
I would say anytime that you have a job and your boss comes up and is like, hey, we're going to re-interview for your job, you're free to apply. I think there's some worry there. Otherwise, if everything was going fine and they didn't have a problem with you, I don't know if they'd be trying to interview possible replacements. So yeah, I think you got to be a little bit concerned if you're Carlos. And if you're Bucky, about what's going to happen, you never know what candidates are gonna pop up and want your job. So as confident as lawyers are, I'd be a little concerned.
And the final decision on that is made by the council, or
yeah, it's made absolutely 100% by the council. It's handled everything goes through the city clerk's office. The council gets the copies of the resumes and hears the interviews. It does the interviews. It's all done by the council. The mayor's office has very little to nothing to do with it.
Simple majority or super majority?
On municipal judges, I think it just needs to be a simple majority, but you're putting me on the spot there. But I think it's judges, council attorney, and the budget are the three things I think could have a simple majority.
Yeah, it's going to be, you mentioned the new faces on there. We've talked about it here all summer and into the election and afterwards as well. It is going to be, and I don't just flippantly say this, it's going to be very interesting to me to see how, with new voices, new people on the council, how the same old stories may look different going forward.
I mean, we're talking about a completely different dynamic, right? Over more than half the council's changing hands. And two of the members two of the new members are, the handpicked successors of the people that are leaving, and Ben Reynolds and Scott Jones. But still, you never—they're their own people with their own minds, and their own votes. So we'll have to see what happens. But it does definitely has the potential to change the dynamic.
And once again, you said they go like for their orientation meeting or whatever on the 1st, and then their first day and the next day, right? They'll be in their first council meeting.
The first meeting will be the 2nd. Their organizational meeting where they choose a president and the attorney and all that good stuff will be the 1st.
Very good. As always, man, I appreciate our time together. Thanks for what you do, and I'll be checking back with you real soon.
Thanks, Sean. I appreciate it.
All right. There he is. Dale Leash from Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. Speaking of Lanyap, too, I'll do this when we come back from the break, or just direct y'all to look at the op-ed from co-publisher Ashley Trice, if you the new land app, it's called Where is Kressel Threadgill? We talk about this a little bit when we come back, but it's an interesting read as well. Some of the conversation that's happened here on this station, it seems to be being mirrored in this discussion as well. So we'll talk about that. All right, coming right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, we'll keep it. It's a discussion of school in a way. I mentioned Ashley Trice's op-ed. She said she's going to join us tomorrow on the show to talk about that. That's good. But right now, some testimony going on in Washington with Attorney General Merrick Garland talking about the schools in a way. And all the other things going on with the DOJ. I see there's Matt Gaetz questioning Representative Matt Gaetz. Let's go to that. Let's go to that audio right now.
One party or another preserves or captures the majority that legislative proposals are successful or not successful. No prohibition against the department hiring partisan committee staff as prosecutors, is there?
As I understand it, every administration, including the one preceding this one, has hired people who have been committee staff. Yeah. I don't think there's a statutory limitation. If the House of Representatives and the Senate think that partisan or I'm not sure what
that's how Preparara got his job. He worked for Schumer and then he ended up in the Southern District. So we have people who can be lobbyists and then prosecutors. We have people who can be political consultants and then prosecutors. We have people who can be partisan committee staff and then prosecutors. The public integrity section has jurisdiction over election integrity, correct?
It has jurisdiction over election crimes, yes.
Yes. So is there any prohibition against people who've been lobbyists, partisan committee staff, or political consultants actually going in and serving in the public integrity section? Or is that allowed?
Just say again, the hiring in the public integrity section is a career hire made under the civil service. It's not made.
I know, I'm worried about their prior career, though. See, what I think is that if someone has been a political operative, to then put them in charge of election crimes, it's kind of like having the fox guard the hen house, don't you think?
So if you think that, that would be a perfect example of something the House should pass a statute barring people from particular professions from working in the Justice Department.
And would you support that legislation?
I'd have to look at what it is, and I have to look at whether it itself violates the First Amendment, but I think there have ever been any restrictions like that before.
I appreciate your open-mindedness, and I hope that persists during your time at the department. Would you provide the committee a list of lobbyists, former lobbyists, or just former political consultants who work in the public integrity section so that we might inform on the legislation that you've suggested we might consider?
I don't intend to create a list of career officials and what their previous jobs were.
So if there are people who literally were political operatives who have prosecuting authority in the area that oversees elections, you won't give us the list.
I don't have any idea whether there is any such person.
Time of the gentleman has expired. Ms. Scanlon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Attorney General Garland, for appearing here today in a timely manner and responding to our questions, as well as for your efforts to be responsive to the issues facing America today. Thank you. I want to address two primary areas in my limited time, attacks on elected officials and attacks on elections. As several of my colleagues have pointed out, the far right's lies about election integrity have led to intimidation and threats of violence and death being made against elected officials and their families. In Pennsylvania, we saw armed extremists come across state lines to try to disrupt the counting of votes in Philadelphia, and an election commissioner had to put his children in hiding after death threats were made against him and his family. With the reopening of schools this fall, we've now seen similar criminal conduct being directed at teachers and school board members with the encouragement of far-right extremists, including some elected officials. I take this personally because I was a school board for 10 years, almost a decade, until 2015. And during that time, I had thousands of hours of conversations with involved parents and constituents in grocery stores, on baseball fields, and in courtrooms and school board meetings. Sometimes the discussions were passionate, but everyone always respected the boundaries of protected speech. And those exchanges of opinions and information were always conducted with the goal of exchanging information, reaching solutions for the community. We never, ever experienced any threats to the personal safety of board members, educators, or their families. And that has changed. The personal and physical attacks that have been directed against school leaders in recent months have crossed well over the line of protected free speech or parental involvement and have become criminal conduct. And that's what we're talking about here. As you noted, parents have a right to be heard and to complain and to argue. But parents and outside agitators do not have the right to criminally harass or threaten or assault school leaders and their families. We've heard some of the incidents that have occurred elsewhere around the country. In my district, police had to be called to several meetings after agitators disrupted the meetings. And elsewhere in Pennsylvania, a candidate for office urged community members at a public rally to, and I quote, "Forget going into school boards with freaking data. You go into those school boards to remove them. I'm going in with 20 strong men, and I'm going to give them an option. They can leave or they can be removed." I mean, that's not ordinary speech. I mean, it's a type of conduct that has led school boards and school officials to request help from law enforcement.
All right. So we're getting this. Not ordinary speech is what's coming from Mary Gay Scanlon, who is a Democrat response there. You heard Matt Gaetz at the beginning of it. It's just a little bit. It's been going on for quite a while here. The ordinary speech. You take one example there and try to make the whole case on it. Is it threatening for parents to come into a school board meeting and say, in the next election cycle, I'm going to get you, we're going to run against you? That's what our country's based on. That's not, I mean, just because they don't want to hear it. And if you believe you're in the right, well, there'll be more people that would oppose and that that school board member would stay in. So an update here on the story. What's going on today? So you got Garland testifying at this House hearing. The DOJ, of course, has multiple controversies going. This story from Fox News says Attorney General Merrick Garland is testifying at the House Judiciary Committee hearing dedicated to oversight of the Justice Department at a time when the agency is in the middle of several high-profile cases and controversies. Republicans have seized on Garland's recent memo to Justice Department employees about intervening in incidents of violence or intimidation targeting state and local school board officials. GOP lawmakers have criticized Garland for overstepping by getting involved in matters that should be handled by state and local law enforcement, and for issuing memos days after the National School Boards Association asked the Biden administration to utilize tools involving the terrorism-related Patriot Act to deal with these situations. The NSBA cited incidents of nonviolent disruption of school board meetings where parents voiced their concerns about issues such as the teaching of critical race theory, prompting Republicans to voice fears that federal involvement will influence conservatives to keep quiet instead of continuing to engage with officials. Well, if you're going in there to a school board meeting and you're threatening somebody's well-being or their life or something like that, then I would like a foot placed in your backside. But if you're going in there and saying, what y'all are doing is not what we want, what y'all are doing is not what I believe the job of the school board is, and I'm opposing you now, and I'm going to work to get you somebody to run against you and beat you in the next cycle, that is not that part. If you go in and say, I'm going to beat you up, okay, now we're talking about something I'm interested in. If somebody says, I'm going to try to get you out of office, that's how our system, that's not going to be allowed? Or even saying that you would have federal oversight here, like they said in this story, would have a chilling effect on speech. I think it would. It goes on here to say, committee ranking member Jim Jordan attempted to show a video of parents at a school board meetings during his opening remarks, but Representative Jerry Nadler, Jerry in the pull-em-up pants, refused, claiming that Jordan did not provide 48 hours notice. Jordan stated there's no official rule requiring such notice, but Nadler did not allow the video to be shown. we have jumped the shark on this. Garland did not directly address the school board issue at all in his opening statement. He did make some general comments about protecting Americans from threats while also safeguarding people's freedoms. Which one is one exclusive of the other? A quote from the opening statement, so Garland said, every person living in this country expects and deserves their government, that their government protect them against a wide range of threats, from international and domestic terrorism to cyber attacks to violent crime and drug trafficking. As our country's chief law enforcement officer, I'm committed to supporting law enforcement at all levels as they work to protect our country from these threats, while also zealously guarding civil liberties and ensuring our own accountability to the American people, end quote. Representative Steve, is it Chabot out of Ohio? C-H-A-B-O-T. Is it Chabot or is it Chabot? Was the first of several Republicans to bring up the school board issue at the hearing, telling Garland that he, quote, found it deeply disturbing that the National School Boards Association convinced the Biden administration to sick you and your Justice Department, the FBI, on any parents that were involved as if they were domestic terrorists, end quote. So, is that a chilling of speech? Now, once again, I'm not here. If you're some person that goes in and threatens the members of the school, I'm going to beat you up, I'm going to do that, then I'm not on your team. I'm sorry. I'm not there for you. But if you're going, you know what? Y'all stink. Y'all are horrible. Y'all have done a horrible job. You've been pushing this stuff. I don't care how extreme you say. Y'all are a bunch of knuckleheads. And that is free speech. And to say, have DOJ come in and say, well, we're not going to shut that down, but we're going to have people watching that and monitoring people for the kind of speech they're going to. What is the purpose of that other than chilling free speech? Come back to this in just a minute here. News is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:50, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. They have gone into recess in Washington. Well, I mean, that actual committee, not all of Washington, I don't think. Guess they'll come back with the play the back nine. They're at the turn now. I think there's another 12 Democrats, 12 Republicans, or is it 6 and 6? I'll have to look at that up for this continuing testimony. So at some point here in the next hour or so, probably they'll be back into the mix. And Attorney General Merrick Garland will continue that testimony there. All right. And we'll go to the phones here. Lots of text. Okay, here we go. Let me read. Jace, I thought the same thing. We'll give you that, Jace. Matt Gaetz talking about integrity. Yeah, probably not the best person to open with, right? That's true. Jason says, thanks to the turtle for keeping mealy-mouth Merrick off the big bench. Now, Jason's referring to Senator Mitch McConnell as the turtle. Dan says, the way they subtly redefine what is and what is not free speech on the fly is almost impressive. Terry says, telling people to riot is free speech if you're a Democrat, but hurting a school board member's feelings is terrorism if you're not following the Democrat talking points. I tell you what, we'll get to the phones, and then we'll come back to more of these texts, because let's go to the phones, and go to somebody. Somebody disagrees goes first. Clint in Fairhope. Hey, Clint.
How do you know I'm going to disagree?
Okay, so, Clint, are you going to disagree with me?
Yeah.
I'm a winner! Woo! Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, you're good. Well, I was just listening. I love when you do these stories and you just try to blow things. I mean, you just blow it out of proportion.
Okay. Tell me how.
Like Garland, did he ever say that he was going to send in the DOJ over somebody calling a school board member a knucklehead? Did he ever say that?
It said terrorist. I don't have the quote in front of me, but terrorist language, right? So what do you define that as?
Well, are you defining it as knucklehead?
Yeah. I mean, because when people come in and say, it's a wide, okay, so his opening statement here, he said, every person living in our country expects and deserves their government to protect them from a wide range of threats, from international domestic terrorism to cyber attacks to violent crime and drug trafficking. Yep. As our country's chief law enforcement officer, I'm committed to supporting law enforcement at all levels as they work to protect our country from these threats. Okay, so he just laid those out, the threats. And okay. So why are they calling them into schools where nobody's threatened anybody's life? I mean, the places where somebody's done something like that, then I'm on the side. I'm going to put a foot in their butt, take them out. But if they go in and say,
nobody's done that.
What do you mean nobody's done that? They're bringing the FBI and the DOJ to oversee the speech of the parents. This should be done at a local level. Why do the feds need to come in here? Is there a civil right? Right. Is there a civil right being lost by somebody? Why would the feds?
They're not doing it over speech.
They are indeed.
They're not, and that's what they've
Who's been, done something
look,
then?
If it's, go to the second article on FoxNews.com, like right now, and you'll see it's not over the First Amendment. It's not over speech. The memo was about incidents of violence or intimidation.
Intimidation. Whoa. Intimidation in speech. I'm going to get you out of office.
Calling somebody a knucklehead is going to qualify as intimidation.
I'm going to get you out of office. What about that?
Quotes from Garland. I want to be clear. The Justice Department supports and defends the First Amendment right of parents to complain as vociferously as they wish about the education of their children and their curriculum taught in schools. That is not what the memorandum is about at all, nor does it use the words domestic terrorism or Patriot Act.
Why would the feds need to be involved then? Why can't the locals do it?
The NSBA, I'm assuming it stands for the National School Board Administration, mm-hmm. sent a letter to the Justice Department yep. asking them to, hey, come and look at this and see if there's some ways you can help.
They jumped right in.
That's it.
They jumped right in. The Biden administration jumped right in on this.
Huh?
The Biden administration green-lighted it, and they jumped right in on this.
What do you do when an organization, the NSBA, who represents over 90,000 school board members, when they send a letter saying, hey, we're having problems here, we want you to come in and help us take a look at this?
Now,
and then they send a memo out, the DOJ. I mean,
you don't think DOJ asked them to send?
What do you do?
You don't think they asked them to send a memo?
When 90,000 members send you a letter, do you just ignore it?
Well, okay. First of all, do you think that maybe DOJ sent a note or back channel to, hey, send us a note so we can do something about this? Because if you do, we can. You think that's possible?
But why would you make that jump? I mean,
what do you mean, why would you make that jump?
Why does everything have to be a conspiracy theory?
Everything isn't. I mean, Lord knows, if there's somebody who's not conspiracy theory on the radio, it's me, Clint. And so why is it a conspiracy theory when I ask? One second.
Let's take the example of the live feed. Let's take the example of the live feed you use. That Democrat rep, whoever she was, used an example of
Naomi,
somebody said, you can either resign or we're going to bring in 20 men to remove you.
Right. And that is a different thing.
Ignored that in your commentary and you skipped right
into... No, I didn't. How many times did I say if you threaten...
You call somebody a knucklehead,
BS, man.
Coming in after.
How many times did I say if somebody threatens somebody directly, then I'm not on your side? Did you hear that or did you not pick up on that, Clint?
Yes, I did, but you're just making up the knucklehead thing to downplay it and make it look like
I think you're trying to push past it to make something make it all okay because you would like you would like the federal government to be, you know, there to oversee what parents say at these school board meetings. That's what I think. If you're going to do that kind of game, then I think you want to shut down parental speech is what I think.
I don't see how you leap to that conclusion.
Very easily. It's annoying, isn't it? Remember that.
But I'm not leaping to conclusions. You are. I'm giving you like what a Fox News article says straight up.
Then why are they there?
You're downplaying, again, just like you downplayed the last time I called in.
Yeah. Do you think, by the way, just side note, so do you think that without any communication beforehand, that the National School Board, the NSBA, just sat down and said, we need to send a letter to the DOJ. And they sent it, and the DOJ said, look at here, what came in the mail today, a letter from the NSBA. Oh, let's look at this. Here's how we can help. Do you think it worked that way?
I don't know.
Do you think it? I don't think it worked that way. No, I don't.
Okay, well, you don't think so, and I'm saying I don't know. But I do know that there have been threats to school board members.
And those should be dealt with by the local officials, and I agree. You don't get to threaten. If you threaten somebody's life or limb or something like that, then I'll put a foot in your backside. I'm not for that.
Okay, and as far as I've seen, the DOJ is coming in to support the local and state officials.
But why can't they do it on their own? Why does it have to be the DOJ doing it?
I don't know. Why'd they send a letter to the DOJ? I don't know.
Because the DOJ wanted them to send them a letter so they could react.
Well, see, I don't know. I guess you can think that if you want to think that.
I'm lucky that I can think what I want to. I appreciate it, just like you can. Clint, thanks for the call. And no, did somebody say, you didn't ask about the Garland? Listen, this is a discussion we can have even without bringing up Garland's son-in-law and his business where he sells academic supplies and teach CRT and all that. I didn't have to do that. All right, well, we'll calm it down with Dale Jackson from WVNN. He joins me next. I'm going to disagree with him, so get ready.